This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is brought to you by Yo Radio, the first music and radio platform with stations curated and managed by artists and influencers from across the globe. From Drake Bell to Megadeth's David Ellefson to UFC star Uriah Hall, just to name a few. Welcome to Yo Radio. Yo Radio delivers the best listener experience and is completely free. From hip-hop to rock to blues to EDM, Yo Radio has the music you want at your fingertips. Download the app now in the App Store for Apple devices and in the Google Play Store for Android. Or just go to YoRadio.com. That's YoRadio.com.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Over 45 years ago, this was a special time in my life because I became friends with a longtime friend of mine, Kenny McCutcheon. This was special because at that time, Kenny had moved into the house two doors over, and I became friends, and we are friends today. I want to tell you a special story because this is Baseball Outside the Box. This is the show that brings you the most interesting, unique coaches, trainers, people involved in sports that are some of the best in the world, and this is a special show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are about to tell you a story that I believe is historical from the standpoint of a young person who started in a sport, who self-taught himself in a special sport, and became one of the best hockey coaches, trainers in the world. And I got to tell you, we're going to go into the story a little bit, but he has shown people around the world and in the U.S. that, you know, you don't always have to have played the game to be able to coach the game. But not only did he not play either in high school or college, he self-taught himself how to train athletes. He self-taught himself how to skate, how to become a professional skater. He's skated with the best in the world. So we're going to tell you a great story. But before we do, you notice we've been off for a couple weeks. We have not forgotten you. We've been traveling around the world, first of all, with Caliendo Sports, Team America baseball team that traveled throughout Europe. We were in Italy. What a fantastic trip that was for all our young people. One of the best international experiences someone can have. If you're interested, always contact me. If you'd like to take a team, if you're a coach or if you're a player, you'd like to participate in an international sporting event or anywhere in the world, contact myself. You've got my email at petercaliendo@icloud.com. And right after that, we continued on to the World Baseball Softball Confederation 15U World Cup, the best players in the world in Panama. That was an outstanding event for 12. The USA took home the gold, beating home crowd Panama in front of 20,000 people. That was an outstanding, outstanding event. And I was proud to be on the tournament committee and be able to see a lot of the games that were going on at the time. So we were gone for a couple weeks, but we are back, and this is Baseball Outside the Box. We're excited about today's show. So first of all, let me tell you a little bit about Kenny McCutcheon. He's a childhood friend. We still keep in touch. A very special person in my life. I call him a self-made hockey coach. You'll see what I'm talking about as we get into it. I'm going to give you a brief overview of his career. His career is, we could be on here for hours talking about it, but I can tell you this, he became a stick boy with the Chicago Blackhawks. He started working with the trainers with the Blackhawks. He skated with the players at times. He also skated with a lot of alumni players. Started a hockey school. He went on to become the women's Olympic coach in Sochi, Russia, where they won the silver. He was with the Chicago Wolves, I believe, over 16 years. He'll correct me on that. We're going to get into his specialty when it comes to skating, what he teaches, and finally reaching the pinnacle of, the top of his career. He joined the Columbus Blue Jackets NHL hockey team as one of the coaches under the direction of John Tortorella. I shouldn't get that name wrong.
Stanley Tortorella.
Tortorella. Kenny, thanks for explaining that to us. You think an Italian would get an Italian name right.
Yeah, so I would think so.
Let me welcome Kenny McCudden. How you doing, buddy?
Pete, I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome, and thank you for having me on. And, yes, we go way back, and we know about each other's careers and our passions. And passions is what I think it's all about as far as to get us where we are today.
Well, that's what we're going to get into. And I got to tell you, I still remember that first day when, you know, you moved next door, you were up on the roof, and I think you were practicing hockey or golf, or, you know, you got several passions, hockey being your number one. But, you know, and then we became friends, and I, you know, we both went our own ways in the hockey and baseball. But, you know, I still remember the days where we practiced together baseball. We played together baseball. We played high school baseball together, but we practiced hockey together. We kind of helped each other in our sports. And I thought that was a great start to our, you know, our friendship.
Well, for sure. And the thing was, you're the guy that got me started in baseball. I mean, you were the one telling me, probably in seventh grade, to start playing Little League, and it led into, I think, a little bit of pony ball and high school ball, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I never even thought about joining a team as far as when it came to baseball, but I think you might have recognized something, that I had decent eye and hand coordination, and the baseball kind of came easy to me as far as at the younger ages, and loved the game, and I think the game was a completely different game than the game of hockey, obviously, for me. But the one thing I did love was the challenge of being up the bat and putting the ball and the bat together was very similar to the reaction of making a deflection tip or whatever the case was with a puck coming at you, whether it be 40 miles an hour or whether it be 70 miles an hour, no different than a pitch. But I enjoyed the game of baseball, but you're the guy who actually got me started by saying, you got to start playing baseball.
But interesting, and folks out there, so you know, we bring this show to you because for years, Kenny and I have been talking about, you know, how certain things that we do in baseball, certain things that Kenny does in hockey, talking to each other, how each sport can help. And we believe that, you know, by learning from other sports, you can really become creative and become a better coach, player. We have a lot of parents that are coaches, so you know, this is a show that the reason we're bringing hockey on board is because I've learned a lot from Kenny just by talking to him about what he does with his players. And Kenny, one of the things you mentioned was the passion you have for the game. Explain to our, you know, all our coaches or parents and young, even young players are listening out there. When you first started, why you got into hockey and the passion, what did that do for you? Why did that make you a better coach?
Well, I've got a quote, Pete, that, passion can bring on reality, and I think if somebody loves something enough at a young age and they keep on pressing at it and working at it, and I believe if they work at it on their own without the influence of their parents pushing them, that's the key. And I think whether you stick at a sport because you want to put the time in and try to dig something out of it is the key, and not having a parent pushing you, whether it be over the boards or through the backstop of a baseball diamond. I believe a kid, whether you're playing the piano or putting a paintbrush to a piece of paper or whatever the case, or canvas, and playing a musical instrument, it's the time that you put in. And if you want to continue at it and you realize that you're getting decent at it, I think that's just the love that generates throughout whatever you might want to do. And hockey was my thing. And growing up in Chicago and watching the Keith Magnusons and the Bobby Halls and the Stan Mikitas and the Tony Espositos, they were very, very big years throughout Chicago back then, no different than the 69 Cubs with the Kessingers and the Santos and the Ernie Banks and them. But with hockey, the resources weren't there, Pete. You and I are on the back end of our 50s here and hopefully just starting the front nine of our life still. But, you know, growing up watching the Blackhawks and not being able to get a ticket, the supply and demand at that time when you were 8 to 12 years old was even better because if you did get to a game, what a great blessing that was. But to be able just to only see the odd games on TV and dream what it might be like to be on a pro sheet of ice or to skate with a Stan Mikita, for instance. Those are just dreams, but dreams can become realities, and if you stick at something long enough, you work at it, stranger things have happened.
Well, Kenny, you know, and we're going to get into some of your background too, but I want to, you know, a lot of young people nowadays, and I see it a lot, and I want you to address this, you know, they kind of want things quick, and sometimes they don't want to sacrifice. I want you to explain to the audience some of the sacrifices you made as a young person, you know, when you got into coaching, in order to get to where you're getting, you know, it just didn't happen overnight to you. What did you have to go through?
Well, I think one of the biggest sacrifices, Pete, goes back to high school, not going out on Friday or Saturday nights with 20 of your buddies that maybe weren't into sport the same way and just hanging around. But I remember in high school, Friday and Saturday, you know, cleaning the local ice rink near my house just to be able to get ice time and you know, being able to play minor and youth level hockey up to high school because ice time was a premium. It was very, very expensive back then, and it's ridiculous today. A sheet of ice today is anywhere between $350 to $500 an hour for a sheet of ice. Back in my day when I was a kid, it was probably about $50 to $75, but an awful lot of money. But that was a sacrifice in itself. When you're young and you're not going out the same, but you want to practice at something to be better. And that Friday and Saturday practice on my own in a little studio rink, which was 40 feet by 60 feet, really transferred into the game on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon that you played. And everything that you self-taught yourself, because coaching wasn't the same, Pete, as you know, when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the resources today in sport are incredible, the private resources. But I think the sacrifice there alone when you're young is huge. And when you get older, I don't think it's the sacrifice of yourself. I think it's the sacrifice of others, whether it's your family or close friends that don't get to see you the same when you get a little bit older because of your travel. And it could be your wife. It could be your mother and father. It could be just dear, dear friends that you just don't get to see that much because of the amount of travel. But I think that's the sacrifice on the pro side. But the rewards and what you reap from it are terrific. But it's almost like, you know, you almost feel guilty by calling them sacrifices, because if you love doing something, I really don't believe it's a sacrifice by the end of the day.
But I got to believe that also perseverance is important, because I think you've gone through a lot. And, you know, I remember when you were skating in the backyard at nights, you know, you froze your own rink. You did a lot of things. You taught yourself. And this is something I want to really address. You know, you persevered because, you know, you also started to work with the Blackhawks. Well, that's not an easy task. I mean, you didn't exactly come from an NHL family. You didn't have maybe even the contacts. You know, how'd you work that out?
Pete, at the local rink, you know, playing at 15, 16 years old, you're a bantam or a midget. That's the level of hockey that you're playing at that time. And the Blackhawks practiced at the local ice rink in Franklin Park, Illinois. And, you know, when I knew that they would be coming in, because they would use our ice arena when Chicago Stadium was being used for concerts, or they would use our ice rink to be close to O'Hare Airport if they were going on a road trip. Well, they might have practiced there a dozen times a year throughout 2 or 3 years of my young career when I was playing hockey out of that rink. And obviously started helping out the trainers and slugging bags. And I don't know, maybe 100 kids were waiting to get close to those locker rooms. And I was one of those kids that was able to get close and help out the trainers. And that led on to me being hand selected, maybe out of 100 kids to eventually come down to the Chicago Stadium, which is like going to Yankee Stadium or Wrigley Field, but and working directly with the two trainers, which would be an equipment manager and a medical trainer by the name of Lou Vargas, Skip Thayer, where they were two legendary trainers. And today in the game, in the NHL game today, they'll have 4 or 5 trainers on each side, on the medical side or the equipment side. Back then, they only had one and one, and I became the very first third man. After my second year of being a stick boy, they hired me as an assistant trainer. And I thought that was going to be my life, Pete, where I was going to be in the NHL as a trainer, whether I'd go back to school and maybe become a medical trainer or just an equipment manager. And that's where my thoughts were, because I already had that little NHL in already and that job. And I became the first third man in Blackhawk history, and that meant I was an assistant to the main two trainers. And I had a great upbringing. I mean, wide-eyed at 16 or 17 years old, being part of a National Hockey League team. And like you said, not a family member to put yourself in there. I kind of just showed that I wanted to be around it, and they chose me. So I just think it was a wonderful start.
Well, I know sometimes we got to have a little luck on our side too, but like I said, perseverance, man, and being there and doing the things, you know, and not looking for a job right away, but, you know, showing people what you can do. I believe you did that. And now, folks, this is just a small part of the story. We're going to get into even more. This is an incredible story, I think, that needs to be told, and told even more on a bigger stage, but it will one day. Kenny, both you and I, very similar. We both, you grew up together. We went different directions when it comes to sports. We kept in touch all the time. I feel like we both self-taught in some ways. I went to a baseball school, learned from a lot of good coaches. You went with the Blackhawks. I'm sure you learned from a lot of great coaches, a lot of players. You know, you taught yourself, and explain to the audience, you taught yourself a special skill that you use in hockey. I mean, you train hockey players. But explain a little bit about that and what you actually, what's your specialty when it comes to coaching?
Well, I mean, with the training, you know, probably from the age of 26 on, I was very, very fortunate to have a partner who played 10 years in the National Hockey League that hand-selected me and said, let's go into business together. And he was an ex-Blackhawk by the name of Grant Mulvey. And Grant said to me, he says, Kenny, I think we can teach kids the game of hockey during the season while they're playing and that type of thing. And I said, Grant, I don't believe it will work, because I don't think coaching staffs for youth-level hockey teams are going to want to hear our voice. Well, I was wrong. And what I learned throughout the years, whether it's at the minor level, youth level, pro level, is it's a long season of hearing just that coach or that group of coaches. And sometimes when a guest coach comes walking through the door for 2 or 3 days, or maybe once a week for 4 months, whatever the case was, like, for instance, what Grant and I did, that voice can go an awful long way. And we started that way. And, you know, as far as the teaching part, what we were teaching people was skills. I mean, we were teaching skating, puck control, passing, shooting, positional play, team play. So it was well-rounded. But the greatest words of advice that were given to me were from my partner at that time. And he was a self-taught teacher. And I wish he would have stuck at it, because he was outstanding, but he went in a different direction with hockey after his playing days, after our hockey school. But the greatest thing he taught me was, you can't teach a 10 or 12-year-old what you are teaching 16 and 17-year-olds. Because I always tried to ramp it up right away, because I expected so much out of kids. Well, I learned at a very young age that, yes, you can ramp it up if the kids are ready and prepared for it and have had the proper teaching. But to really teach the fundamentals the right way, you just got to come down to the level of what you're working with. Whether you're working with 6-year-olds, 12-year-olds, or 20-year-olds, you got to change it up, obviously. But that was my rookie years, and I think the beauty about what we do, Pete, as coaches, is that you learn every single year. And if you don't, I think it's time to move on, go into something else or retire. But I'm constantly being a sponge, watching other professional coaches. And believe it or not, you can learn an awful lot from minor league coaches and youth-level coaches. And I still do to this day, because there's great, great coaches out there just working with 15-year-old kids today. And that's all they want. That's where they want to be. But they're still great coaches. So you can learn from so many different people for what you want to teach. But my trait today and where I made it to the National Hockey League was teaching the fundamentals, basically, of skating, puck control, passing, and shooting, and not trying to reinvent the game.
Fantastic. And we're listening to Kenny McCutcheon, Columbus Blue Jackets coach. and great friend for over 45 years. I won't get into the actual ages. I know Kenny did at the beginning of the show, but I'll get him back for that one. Something that helped me a great deal, I want to address it because I want to see what you think about it. You mentioned it just a minute ago, working with young kids. I felt that when working with young kids, it made me a much better coach when working with professionals or older players. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, what do you mean exactly by that, Pete? What are you trying to say? What's your question now?
When I was working with young kids, you know, for many years at Mickey Young Baseball School, I felt like it made me a better coach because I had to break down the fundamentals. I had to make it
fun. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I had to be more creative, you know, and I know you're extremely creative because I've learned a lot of good things just by sitting talking to you. So, I mean, it made me a better coach working with young kids, and you have a hockey school, you know, and you've had it for years. So how much has that helped you with working with the older players or professionals?
Well, it's a great question, and I wanted to answer it properly, but I think it gets you in a position to learn how to convey, how to bring a message across. And today I'll speak for hockey. If you are not the right coach, and what I mean by that is if you don't have a background and you just don't bring the message to a group of 7 or 8 year olds, the 7 or 8 year olds look at you and can actually look through you. So, because their expectations are high and their training is getting better. So, I always believe a coach has to, you know, even if you're giving your time today and you're not getting paid for it, you better come prepared because the kids are going to be able to see through you. But yeah, Pete, to answer your question fully, I think to be able to teach and coach at the younger levels is what's going to make you a better coach with the older kids, because the great minutes and the great hours at the younger ages or the years that you put in there are all stepping stones for the older players as you get older. So yeah, I wouldn't be where I am today unless I worked with every single age level throughout my career.
And that's going to lead into my next question. But folks, go to icecompanyhockey.net. Check out Kenny's website. You can check out his background. Check out a lot of things he has on the website. I think it's a great website. And Kenny, the reason I brought that up was because, you know, the next story that I'm about to bring up, you're going to tell it, but I'm just going to introduce it, which, you know, I was just stunned and amazed. And I think it's one of the greatest stories in sports. And that is when the NHL went on strike, the Chicago Blackhawks, the players could not use their coaches to train, and somebody called you and you couldn't believe it who it was, and you hung up on him, I believe. Tell that story, because that's going to lead into what that person told you after the training was done.
Well, it was 2013 with the Chicago Blackhawks, and you had mentioned earlier, Pete, from the start of the show, my background with the Chicago Wolves, and you know, which is equivalent to AAA baseball, and that's where my real teaching was for, like you said, over 16 years in the minors prior to getting my National Hockey League job. But we were getting ready to start our season with the Chicago Wolves, and we usually start about a week to a week and a half later than the NHL. And got a call from a very, very dear friend of a couple of players from the Blackhawks, and he says, the Blackhawks are on their own, and they don't have their coaches out on the ice. They can't, because they are at a work stoppage right now. And is there any chance of you working with our players? I said, well, that would be difficult, especially during your ice time, because that's our ice time. That's going to start up here in about a week or so with the Chicago Wolves. Well, bottom line is the group of Chicago Blackhawks that were being run by Jamal Mayers and Jonathan Toews were like at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they put it off to like 11. So I would leave the suburbs after my training in the minors and go straight down to the city to the Blackhawks training facility in the city and start working with whether it be 5 players on the ice or 20 players on the ice from the Chicago Blackhawks. And I was very, very lucky to be able to do that. And I remember Jonathan Toews, the team captain, he was running the practices, and he had probably been running about 6 or 7 of them. And hockey players are hockey players, Pete. They're not coaches. So, I'm sure that really happens with an awful lot of sports where players have a tough time coaching, or trying to run drills because they're usually used to following drills. But I got there, and that morning Jonathan Toews came into the referee's room. This is a time where the Blackhawks weren't even allowed to use their own locker room because, again, it's a work stoppage. And so I was dressing in a referee's room. The players were dressing in a youth-level hockey room. And Jonathan Toews came over to me and says, "So what's your plans? What are you going to do?" My exact words were, "Johnny," I go, "you're either going to like me or you're not going to like it. If you don't like it, I just go back to working with the Chicago Wolves every morning." And what happened from there, Pete, was this was late September, and I worked all the way until the very final day, which I believe was January 3rd, when the work stoppage stopped and the NHL kicked into action the following day. So September, a little bit of September, all of October, November, December, and a couple of days in January, I had basically three quarters of the team. And it was a great, great experience. And it was one of the many things, Pete, that put me on the map for the highest level. But at the same point, I wasn't enamored just to get an NHL job because I turned down, you know, several because it wasn't the right fit. But this was a big help. And anytime you're working with the Patrick Kanes, the Jonathan Toews, the Corey Crawfords in the Nets, it's a bonus. And the Blackhawks, it just won a Stanley Cup in 2010. And, they happened to win the cup that year in 2013. So that year that they beat Boston in the finals, I felt, very, very close to that because I had worked with nearly every single individual on that team that won the cup that year. And even though I was from the outside in looking in and, I had that wonderful feel and that challenge of being with that group of guys and getting them along. And, yeah, it's something, Pete, I'll never forget because it was a cup year, a Stanley Cup year for the Blackhawks, and it was a special year. And even though I'm not part of that team, there was a bit of me that still felt part of it in some ways. But, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't a team member.
Well, the journey goes on because, you know, you're 16 years in the minors. You know, that's an unbelievable commitment, and I think that has something to do with how you got to where you are today. And I remember, and again, I may have misquoted, but I do remember this, and I think it'll lead into exactly what I want to get into now. I remember a quote, and maybe it was one of the players, maybe it might have been Jonathan Toews himself, but he said to you, I believe, when you and I were talking, something in the realm of, this, you know, the practices that they went through were some of the most fun and organized and challenging practices that he's ever been through. Is that a good quote?
Yeah, I believe he said that in the Chicago Tribune only like 3 or 4 days later after I started, because having a minor league coach work with the NHL players at that time was a little different, and having a Chicago Wolves coach work with the Chicago Blackhawks was just a story in itself. So, yeah, I mean, it made news throughout the NHL, and obviously made news throughout the minors, because what we did at that point, Pete, with the Chicago Blackhawks, not too many NHL teams were doing. They were still skating on their own. They had no direction by any kind of professional help. So I knew the Blackhawks were going to come out to a good start. I remember telling some dear friends that I believed that the Blackhawks that year were going to win like 4 or 5, 6 games in a row right off the bat. Well, they got a point in the first 24 games. They never lost a game fully for the first 24. So they just got off to a roaring start. And it goes back to what this show is about, Pete, is that they got their timing. Those months and months that we worked together, that was my key ingredient to bring, was the timing of their hands, the timing of their feet, to bring the right direction and ramp things up every day. And I'm a big, big believer as a professional coach not to beat drills into the ground. And what I mean by that is if a drill's not working, I pull out of it. If I don't like it, I pull out of it and go with another drill. So if I was working with the Blackhawks for an hour and 15 minutes, or what I do today professionally in the NHL, I try to bring 10 to 15 drills to a group of pros, and bottom line is I won't repeat those drills possibly all year. So I'm known for a coach that some players claim that they haven't seen the same drill in years. That's a compliment, but at the same point, I know I'm coming prepared with something different, and I keep you know, notes on who I work with, what I do, the times, the dates, all that kind of thing. So I know exactly where I am with a group of players and what I've worked on in the past. And I honestly try to bring something completely new. And I used these words earlier, without reinventing the game, still sticking to the game in the purest way. And that is fundamentally.
You know, I love to hear that, because I know in baseball, we're kind of getting away from that a little bit. And we're listening to Kenny McCutcheon, Columbus Blue Jackets coach, a great friend of mine for many years. And as you know, Pete Caliendo with Baseball Outside the Box, we believe strongly in learning from other sports. We believe our coaches, players, and parents can learn a lot by watching how other coaches in other sports work with players, train players, talk to players, communicate with them. And Kenny, you know, we talked about the drills. I was fortunate enough to come watch you with the Wolves, training them, and that's the reason I went out, was to watch how you did things. And also with the Blackhawks, I went out and saw you train them, which I thought was an incredible feat. With the drills you do, you know, you say you don't repeat them. How do you come up with some of the drills? I know you may have learned some from the past, but I also know you to be very creative. How do you come up with some of the drills that you actually implement in your practices?
Well, Pete, I just try to break down segments of plays. I try to break down what I see from maybe watching tape or being at a game professionally. As a skills coach and an assistant coach in the NHL, part of my job, for instance, with Columbus is an eye in the sky. So I have the headset on, talking down to the bench to another assistant. And from what you see up above, Pete, you know how slow the game is from up above, the higher you go. And when we get down, whether it's on the baseball field or the ice rink, the game gets an awful lot quicker. So from up above, you can really, really break things down. And I like to work around players. I mean, when I hear about coaches working, whether it be a golf coach who's working with a player one-on-one, or a goalie coach working one-on-one, and I'm sure there's pitching coaches working one-on-one, I love when I hear a coach say that they work around that player and not try to make everybody do the exact same thing. So if we have 22 players, Pete, I am trying to work around 22 players around their game. And it's not necessarily working on what we maybe feel as a coaching staff on their weaker ability or weaknesses. I'm a firm believer of continuing to work on the stronger things that have gotten them through. For instance, it could be pony ball, college ball, and then pro baseball. And it's in my level, it's youth level hockey, college or junior hockey, all the way to minor or NHL. But working with those players on the strong things that have gotten them to where they are today and not forgetting those things. So, because it's very easy for a player to go along and start forgetting about the little things, and then certain things may go wrong in their game, and it could be that easy thing that made them so good that they've gotten away from that they got to get back to. Does that make sense?
It does, and, you know, I was going to mention, you know, in baseball we have slumps. I'm sure there's hockey slumps. When do you approach a player? Does the player approach you? Do you approach the player a certain time? You know, the NHL has a lot of players making a lot of money. And I know in baseball, you know, players are very cautious about making changes. You know, how do you deal with that?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, you got to feel confident to approach a player, because if things are going really bad, maybe coaches in their past have approached them just on the negative side and get on them. Whereas myself, I will approach a player and say, we need to get to work, and we know what that is, and we've got to get out early, whether it be pre-practice or post-practice. And but approaching them in a way where they can trust you and they will trust themselves by going through that practice that you want to bring. But guys also come to me an awful lot where I think that's where I'm that good fit with John Tortorella. And John Tortorella is one of the greatest coaches of all time in the NHL because he allows his staff, and he delegates so well to be that other voice where it's just not his voice. And he's really big on that, Pete, halfway through the season, because they've heard his voice all year long. So he depends on three assistants, and I'm one of those three. And that's where I think I'm a really, really good liaison between John Tortorella and two other assistants that handle the power play and a penalty kill, and Brad Larson and Brad Shaw, who have extensive NHL careers as far as playing and coaching. But I think John Tortorella trusts my voice to be able to get to a player, and sometimes other coaches cannot. So I think I'm very, very approachable, and I think players trust my approach.
Now, folks, just so you know, Kenny and I went to school since we were in grammar school. We went to high school together. We've hung out together. We've done a lot of great things together, a lot of fun. And so I know Kenny's personality. I know the type of person he is. And, Kenny, I got to ask you this because, you know, I believe this is one of your best qualities, let alone your teaching, you know, how you come up with drills, because I've sat with you and we talked baseball and you came up with a bunting drill just out of, you know, top of your head. Just as we're discussing it, and I thought, wow, that was fast. How'd you come up with that drill? But one of the qualities I believe, and I'm assuming that you use in your teaching, is your personality, but also, you know, having fun with the guys. There's got to be times, because I know you love that fun and you love the kid around. I think that's important when it comes to teaching. Explain how you use that and when you use it.
Well, Pete, that's a great point because, you know, when I'll say my age, Pete, I won't say yours. At 57 years old and you're working with 22-year-old players and 24-year-old players that are making $2 million or $6 million a year, you got to bring fun to it. And the fun will come when you win. It's during the tough times when you're not winning the same and the club is not going along the same as a group. But if you could still implement that fun, players are going to rise to the occasion and you're going to break out of those slumps as a team or break out of a slump as a player. But I think when you show fun emotion, when you can hoop it up with players on the ice and they can see at 57 years old that you still got to jump in your hockey stride and you can still do it, and you can pass and shoot, and you come with creativity. And I think that's the big key with coaching today is to be creative. And you talked about that bunting drill. I still remember that drill that I shared with you. And I believe so many drills can transfer to other sports. But creativity, passion, fun are key components, Pete, for, I think, a well rounded coach, and I think the players react to it. They see it, they feel it, and there's, you know, I think they're going to enjoy working underneath you when you're that kind of coach.
Well, that's said well. Now, what about when you're showing individual skills? And I know you work with groups and you work with individuals. When you're showing an individual skill, take us through a little bit about how, you know, the weakness the player might have, and or the strength, as you said, you're going to work on a strength, and how you're going to explain the drill. You're going to show it. You're going to explain it. You're going to use chalkboard. What's the process you go through there?
Well, Pete, it's interesting. I'm known as a coach that doesn't bring players to their knee. I don't bring players to a wax board too often. And I believe I got that from my youth level days and my minor league days because I didn't want to waste ice time. Ice time was a commodity. I didn't want to bring younger players to their knees and just make them watch a coach, you know, show diagrams. So I would either show it before practice or give them a handout or whatever the case is. But at the pro level, I'm the same way. I don't bring anybody over to the, you know, maybe in training camp with certain drills when you've got a big group and you've got to be running the whole entire 200 foot by 85 foot ice rink. I might go to the wax board the occasional time for that, but when I'm running individual drills, whether it's for one player or six or seven players. I try to keep a high pace, which is a key thing in the NHL, because the game is played with pace, and that's the only way you're going to win as a club. But demonstrating, showing as a coach, getting them involved in it, I got to bring the highest pace that I can too. And that is, you know, the last 4 years of my life or 5 years of my life, I've had to go back into the gym in a serious way and just to be able to get on the ice with these guys and to have something in the tank for them is what I'm saying. And I'm not a coach that stands around. I'm a coach that gets involved. So I think bringing pace, bringing drills at their speed is a key, and having them produce those drills at the highest speed, because that's what they're going to be doing day in and day out, but still breaking things down, Pete. It could be, for instance, I mean, like, I know for a fact I brought a drill to our defensemen years ago, 3 years ago in the NHL with the Columbus Blue Jackets, where not every pass is going to be a perfect pass. So I would do a lot of drills by putting the puck in their feet, putting the puck up in their glove where they got to knock it down with eye-hand coordination, putting the puck on the opposite side of them. So if you're a left-hander, you're getting it on your backhand, and you got to get it across your body quickly and get the shot off. And I just felt drills like that were not being used enough at the NHL level. So I do an awful lot of that, and I call them bad pass drills. And that's just a small segment that you can bring. And, you know, you could probably, Pete, I could sit down with you and do things like that in baseball with you, and it'd be no different than forcing a guy, you know, instead of him just catching a one-hopper and throwing it to first base as a shortstop, working his backhand, making him work a backhand high catch, low catch, making him stretch, whatever the case is. I'm trying to use as much analogy as possible, but still at the highest level, still at the highest speed, and making the reps get stronger as they go along. So if you give an individual pro player four reps, I expect that fourth rep to be better than the third, the second, and the first.
See, that's well said. I love what you say, because, you know, you're also putting the athletes in different situations that could occur in the game.
That's right.
Not just a normal situation all the time. And I love hearing that. The other question I had was, you know, when you're working, because you worked, you know, obviously with your hockey school with kids starting at 5 years old,
yep,
all the way. What's the difference you feel when coaches are working with young kids, the difference between that and working with maybe your professional athletes? What do you feel is the difference between the two? What do you do differently, if any?
Well, the one thing I don't do differently, Pete, is the preparation. It drives me nuts when I see a youth-level coach not prepared. And when if I walk through ice rinks, as you'd be walking by diamonds, can you imagine seeing the same youth-level coaches working on the exact same fundamentals all the time? We know that there's thousands. And when the same drill is being worked with seven-year-old kids, for instance, like a breakout play from your end zone to get it to the neutral zone, and they're just doing that over and over and over for weeks. Well, the problem why it's not working is because they still got to work on their skating. They still got to work on their passing, their puck control, their vision to be able to see the ice. So when those things aren't being properly worked on, that breakout's not going to work, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
If a kid can't catch and he can't throw, there's not going to be a turnover as far as for a double play, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Or a relay. Yeah.
Exactly. So the bottom line, that's where you have to break it down at the youth level, but you really have to come prepared. I mean, my preparation for a youth level practice usually was 3 to 5 hours prior. I knew what I was going to do. I had it on paper. I had it memorized. Never had to bring the paper out with me to look, because I had it memorized. And today, with my preparation, to answer your question, when it comes to the pro level, I know the night before what I'm going to do, because I know what I worked on that day. So there's the preparation is 10 to 15 hours prior for the pro level. And it could change, Pete. It could change because maybe the head coach wants to give two guys a little break that want to go with me in the morning, or I thought should go with me in the morning. So you have a little change. You have a change in position. You have a change in the player itself. So then that's where the creativity has to come and the spontaneous thought process has to come. And you've got to change things up on the fly. And that's where I think good coaching comes in too. You've got to think quick. You got to think quick as like a player. A player has to think quick to be able to execute, and no different than a coach. I mean, or no different as a manager. You have to think quick at the high levels.
Kenny, there's in baseball today, especially at the young levels, kids, you know, they're just, in my opinion, they're not given the enough responsibility, enough decision making. You know, the coaches are telling them what to do in games all the time. They never have a chance to be and develop their own instincts. Where do you fall on this when it comes to hockey? You know, when they're young kids, sooner or later, they've got to make some decisions, I would assume.
Well, Pete, I want to give your audience a great line. And this is a line that I learned 3 years ago from John Tortorella. John Tortorella is an American coach with the Columbus Blue Jackets from Massachusetts, and he's the most winningest coach in USA history. Definitely going to go into the Hall of Fame. He's won a Stanley Cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2004. He's coached the Olympic team. He's coached the World Championship team for USA. But he's got a great line, and I hear him use it two or three times a year. And the line is, I don't want to take the sticks out of your hand. He uses that in front of a group of NHL players.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, that line right there is no different than saying, I don't want to take the bat out of your hand. And that is allowing that player to be that player over certain situations. I mean, you know, in baseball, the coach might have a certain thought for that batter. But deep down inside, that batter has maybe another thought, and that batter can do that. And you know what? Maybe that's the better choice, but that player doesn't get that chance. So no different than in hockey, where youth-level coaches are constantly yelling over the boards from the bench at players to do this and do that. Pass here, pass there. Well, pass A for that coach might not have been the right pass for pass A for that player. Pass B for that coach might have been the pass A for the player, is what I'm saying. So the player, even at 10 or 12 years old on the ice, still by the end of the day has the right vision. He's the one being forced. He's the one in the play. He's the one who has to react very quickly. So his reaction might be better than the coach. So going back to that line of John Tortorella, I don't want to take the sticks out of your hand, is saying, guys, I want you to play the game. Play it. Play your game. And I think it's such a great line for pro coaches to learn all the way down to your audience for baseball.
Yeah, and I believe it. The younger they are, the more we give them that ability, the quicker they learn the game. You know, you and I, you know this. I mean, and many coaches out there can relate to this at our age. You know, when we played at the park all day with no coaching and we played the game, you know, we tossed the ball underhand, we hit, we learned that way. And we learned sometimes more by just playing the game than by somebody coaching. And then the next phase comes in. I want to hear your advice to parents, because, again, with your hockey schools and all the kids you work with, you've talked to a lot of parents. What's your advice to parents so that way kids can enjoy the game a lot better and become better at the game they're trying to play, whether it's hockey or baseball?
Well, Pete, when I look back at you and I as kids playing baseball, I think one of the greatest things that we did as far as training for baseball was playing fast pitch up against a wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could just be you and I playing for 4 hours, but you're still throwing, you're still batting, and bottom line, you're still seeing a curveball, you're still seeing a fastball, and then you could bring that to the field, and that would help you so much. And it's no different than playing street hockey in 90-degree weather as a kid. You're playing with a tennis ball or a street hockey ball, whatever the case is. You're playing 3-on-3 in your street shoes, but your eye and hand coordination still has to be there, even almost in a better way, because the ball is bouncing, whereas a puck doesn't bounce. And the same. And you still have to have the vision. You still have to have the creativity, the dialogue, as far as the talking to one another, playing 3-on-3 or playing 2-against-2. And that transfers to the ice rink. So I think parents can still allow their parents to go to the basketball court and let them play all day long, the baseball diamond, the street hockey on a tennis court or whatever. And I'm telling you, by the end of the day, Pete, you're going to get an athlete because of what those little players are putting into that atmosphere, because you still want to compete. You still want to beat your friends, and you're still learning the game, but you're self-teaching yourself, and it's one of the best ways to learn.
You know, and Kenny, in hockey, you know, there's obviously a lot of skating. You know, their lines are fast. You know, you come off the line fast because it's a pretty stressful time on the ice. You know, what your off season with your hockey players, is there a time where they take off, don't do anything? You know, are they training another sport? Are they doing off season training? What's the reason for all this?
Well, great question, Pete. At the pro level, and I think kids can learn from this and parents can learn from this, but usually players will take anywhere between 3 weeks to 5 weeks off of skating. And that's a long time, but at the same point, they've gone through a grueling 82-game schedule. They've gone through playoffs, possibly, and some of them have played four rounds of seven games to win a Stanley Cup. So that's an awful long season. So those are the guys that are taking off that 5 weeks because they have to. But they'll gradually get in after taking that amount of time. They'll gradually get into skating very, very slowly for a couple more weeks. Then they start ramping it up a little bit. Skating with bigger groups of 15 or 20 guys and going through their own practices if they're not working with a skills coach or working with a somebody who's directing them on the ice as a coach. But the big thing that they only take a short break from, Pete, is the off-ice training of maybe 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That means that they get back into the gym immediately, whether it's riding a bike, plyometrics, working with a strength and fitness coach. They have a very, very serious regimented program, whether it's from their own team or whether they are privately working with somebody off the ice, and so many of them do, and they travel for it, and they travel for skills coaches on the ice and that type of thing. But they start ramping it up, Pete. If their season ends May the 1st, they start ramping it up a little bit by mid-July. By August, they're really, really going. And by late August, they're usually traveling back to their cities to start skating with the players that are all getting ready for camp, which is just around the corner. NHL camp opens up on the 13th here coming up. And like, for instance, back home in Columbus right now, I heard 16 players are back in Columbus from our team right now, already practicing on their own. But, Pete, they've been ramping it up probably on a serious note already for about 3 to 4 weeks already. And, but the main thing I need to get across is that it's not 12 months out of the year. And, I believe kids that are, in sport and love their sport that are doing it for 12 months, you know what, that might be a month and a half too long. They've got to pull back on the reins a little bit, try something else. Go out and play a round of golf with your friends, whatever the case is. Have a job and be a boy, be a girl, and enjoy the summer a little bit. But to do something for 12 months out of the year, I think it's a little too much because it's not being done at the pro level. I don't believe there's too many people in pro sport that are doing something for 12 straight months. I know golfers don't do it. I know hockey players don't do it. I can't speak for any other sport. But I think they have to have the time off, take the time off, and get rejuvenated for when they come back.
And, you know, the key point you just said was if they don't do it at the big league level or at the NHL level where they're strong and their bodies are fully developed, then that makes sense, because why would we have young kids do that? Now, you and I talked about this many times, and I want you to address it, you know, cross-training. You know, kids, you know, they don't have to be professional hockey players. They don't even have to be on ice. But if baseball players were for a couple months doing another sport, the benefits, what would be the benefits to helping them in the game of baseball also?
Well, I think we can learn from things. Like I could watch a soccer practice, Pete, you know, at a high level and literally get ideas from a soccer practice and implement that into hockey, which would be that cross training type of thing. But I believe a guy like yourself with your background, you're going to be able to watch one of my practices or other pro coaches, what they do with players, and say, you know what? I think I can bring that to the baseball diamond, even though it's a hockey drill. And, you know, that's it takes creativity. You got to think about how it could transfer. But the players themselves, you know, I mean, I think if a group of youth-level baseball players had to go through some dry land training drills of what hockey players do and put a stick in their hand for eye and hand coordination, it's going to help them as an athlete. So if I had to take 12 of your youth level baseball players at the age of 14 or 15 years old and bring them into my hockey school and make them do the things off ice that my hockey players are doing, they'd be a better athlete for it. And you know, I think that's what you're trying to get at.
Absolutely. Well said. And you know, the thing I love about that is that, you know, it would be fun. And you and I talked about this too, and I brought it up many times. I said, Kenny, you're so lucky. You know, you're a great coach, but at the same time, you know, you got a sport where they're on the ice, they're moving, they're constantly doing something. But then I watch you, and you even become more creative in the sport by setting up the drills. I've watched you set up four or five different drills with situations and then change them up. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, with hockey, if you just set up a few drills, these kids are going to have fun naturally. That's not natural in baseball. In baseball, you've got to even have even more drills. So how you do, that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, because I believe that a lot of things that you produce in the game of hockey can be used in the game of baseball. And one of the things I did want to address was the fun aspect of it, because hockey, you know, is fun at its natural pace. But is that really a true statement? Can hockey not be fun, and why not?
Well, I mean, it cannot be fun if the person directing it's not fun, and that is the coach or the manager. If they're not bringing something to the ball field or the ice rink that's going to make it fun, the kids are going to have that memory. You're going to leave them with that memory of not enjoying themselves. But if it's that coach that, Pete, I mean, I look at some of my greatest coaches that I admired as gym teachers that I had in high school. Mm-hmm. There's two gym teachers that you and I had that both played collegiate baseball that were terrific athletes, but they knew nothing about hockey. But I admired them because they could hit a baseball, they can make a free throw, they could play tennis. They were just great, great athletes. So I admired that right off the bat. So they brought something fun to gym class. But by the end of the day, I respected them because they were athletes. And when they spoke, we listened because they were great, great coaches, and they knew how to convey. So that's amazing when you could say that you got something from a gym teacher, mm-hmm. not necessarily your coach from your sport. But, Pete, going back to, you know, is there hockey coaches that are not fun? Sure. Are there hockey teams that don't have fun? Sure. But I think it all stems from a lack of direction, a lack of dedication, a lack of passion, and that those are things that you have to bring to the minor and youth level players, because the bottom line is we're still talking about a sport. We're not talking about a job.
You know, and that's going to lead into our next two final questions of the show. One of them is coaches' education. You and I have talked about this a great deal. And, you know, hockey has been a leader in coaches' education because USA Hockey's had a coach educational program. USA Baseball has just recently, a year ago, started an educational program for coaches in the U.S., which is amazing because, you know, in my opinion, you need very good coaching at the youth levels, because that's what keeps kids in the game and makes them better players and you know, obviously can create that fun that you're talking about. So, you know, hockey's been advanced when it comes to coaches' education. That's one area I'd like for you to address. And the other one, hockey took a little criticism, but also I believe has helped the game a lot. You know, they've looked at young kids and they eliminated sometimes playing the length of the hockey rink, and they've gone three-way, you know, three games on
correct.
Side
correct.
Side. the faster game. Address all that, because I know at first it was, you know, the parents go wild, it's not hockey, and similar to what we're trying to do in baseball, playing 5-on-5 instead of 9-on-9 when they're real young.
Yeah, the USA Hockey implemented, I want to say, Pete, now it's at least 10 years, the American Development Program, which was to, and they basically took the format off of programs from Finland and Sweden, where they were playing smaller games. And instead of, like you just said, on the equivalent of allowing youth-level players like six-year-olds and an ice rink playing 5-against-5 in a gigantic ice rink, that 5-on-5 became on each end zone and in the middle of the ice, which is called the neutral zone. So you have three different games going the width of the rink of 85 feet, and they put up these bumper pads to separate the rinks. But what that did, Pete, was the puck was always around the players. The players were always touching it. They were learning an awful lot on their own. The eye-and-hand coordination was greater because the play was so confined. So they've done a wonderful job with that, but they've also done a wonderful job with allowing coaches to be able to go into their internet site to be able to get drills for certain levels, certain certifications, getting certain drills only from that certification. So they've done a great, great job. So there's no excuse for a coach, whether you're a Canadian coach going into USA Hockey websites or an American coach going into Canada Hockey's website, because they do a wonderful job with it. But here in North America, the resources, Pete, from learning from the internet, of being able to see X's and O's right there on your screen, are key thing. And again, there's no excuse for a coach not being prepared when they have those type of resources. But yes, USA Hockey's done a fantastic job at the younger levels, being able to make our coaches who are giving their time a better chance to be a better coach, and giving the advanced coach a chance to be able to go back and see things that maybe they have to go back to, they haven't gone back to in years. And Pete, I think there's one thing I need to stress that I love to do, and I think if a young youth-level baseball coach is out there listening, a big thing for me at the younger ages, all the way to the older ages, and I just came back from ASU, which is, I know, a big baseball school, and I just came back from UNLV, which I know is a big baseball school. But I was just working with both colleges the last 10 days, and what I tried to do with those players, and I let those players know, is I'm going to take you out of your position. I'm going to make forwards do defensive things. I'm going to make defensemen do forward things. And it'd be no different than making a catcher be a first baseman, maybe a first baseman playing third base, because the bottom line is they're still working on fundamentals. You're pulling them out of their comfort zone, and you're just making them a more well-rounded athlete. And just to do that for the odd practice here and there is so important, because it's just it's putting them in situations that, Pete, maybe they've never been in. Or guess what? The bottom line is that one hopper that comes to a third baseman on his backhand could be that one hopper that he's going to get at first base that he didn't know how to handle the same way until he did it at third base. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. The famous Ken Revisa, who sadly a month ago passed away, the Chicago Cubs sports psychiatrist, but he's the grandfather of you know, sports psychiatry, always said, you know, that you're trying to put kids in an uncomfortable position to become comfortable. And boy, have you, this is a great way to almost end the show, because I've got one other question for you. It's not even a question, what we do normally at the end of the show. And I'm so thrilled you brought this up, this last topic, you brought that up. And what we normally do is it open it up, you know, the show can go on for hours because you've got a lot of great stuff to bring to coaches and parents and players all over the world. But one of the areas that we allow our guests to do is there's got to be something also that, you know, you wanted to mention other than what you just talked about that we missed that was so important. So this is kind of like your time to talk to the coaches and parents and players about anything you'd like, and then we'll finish the show from there.
Well, Pete, I mean, first of all, I want to open it up where any of your listeners, any of your coaches or players that would want to contact me with any questions and philosophy and that kind of thing could contact me from my website that you had mentioned earlier, icecompanyhockey.net. And you can email me directly from that site. But no, Pete, you're right. We could be talking about this for hours. And, you know, I think it should lead into another segment at some point during the year, because I can even, you know, bring something more to the table and tell you how our year is going and how what we're doing and what we're trying to do as a team and where we are. But I just think what you and I are trying to get out of this as professional coaches is that we want to pass the baton on not only to coaches, but we want to pass something on to players that are the right things. And as a coach, we're gifted and we're blessed. And I think to teach is to touch a life forever, as they would say. And as I talk about those high school coaches as some of the most meaningful coaches to me, I'm sure there's listeners out there that have the same thing, where they had met somebody that influenced them in a way to bring their sport that much further. And it could be a non-coach. It could be somebody that they met that just became a mentor. So I think if there's one thing that I need to bring to the table, and you always want to bring to the table, is sometimes we have to let parents know, too, that it is the child that's playing the game, girl or boy. And we have to allow them to play the game. Especially when they take it to a certain level, that's where the parents got to lay off. But the one thing that we have to thank parents for is allowing their kids to have the resources to be able to play expensive games like the game of hockey and continue it, and get them to the baseball diamond and make the commitment. So our hats off to parents. But at the same point, that I want to make is we have to allow the player to play too. So to those parents out there that are constantly on kids, they have to lay off, because the kids are going to hand the spikes back, or they're going to hand the skates back at a certain age because they don't want to play it. It's the ones that are allowed to play that are going to take the game further, as you and I did, and we took it in a different fashion. We took it in coaching, and boy, Pete, we're pretty lucky guys.
I'll tell you what, well said, Kenny. This has been an outstanding show. And folks, you're listening to Kenny McCutcheon, Columbus Blue Jackets coach, self-made hockey coach, one of the greatest stories, in my opinion, in professional hockey. I know there's been coaches that, you know, did not play in the NHL who won a Stanley Cup, but the way you grew up at the grassroots level, taught yourself, developed your skills when it comes to not only skating, but also coaching, gone to the levels to where you've gone, developed the hockey school, worked with the Blackhawks, the Sochi Olympics with USA Women's Olympic team, trained the Blackhawks, now with the Columbus Blue Jackets, I think is an incredible story. Kenny, I really appreciate it. What we're going to be doing is we're also going to be bringing on Baseball Outside the Box, other coaches from other sports, because, again, we believe we can learn from other coaches in other sports. So I want to thank you for being on the show. We're definitely going to have a second show. That's a no-brainer. So please, good luck this season, and thanks again for being on the show.
Pete, I appreciate our friendship, and I appreciate being on this show, and hopefully we as some listeners learn a few things.
Absolutely. If you didn't learn today, man, I'm not sure when you're going to learn. Folks, that is the end of the show. This is Baseball Outside the Box. Don't forget, check us out on Twitter, at Baseball Out, on Facebook, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Check out Kenny McCutcheon, icecompanyhockey.net. Get his email there. He will respond to you. He will definitely have a lot of great things for you if you have any questions. This is Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box. You listen to the show that brings on some of the best minds in the sport of baseball, but also other sports. And we want to wish you a great season this year, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.